Welcome to The Confident Wallet, a personal finance podcast series from the Washington Post Brand Studio and T. Rowe Price. My name is Lynette Calfani Cox. I'm also known as The Money Coach. I'm the author of the New York Times bestseller, Zero Debt, The Ultimate Guide to Financial Freedom, and I'll be your host. Today's discussion features a roundtable conversation with savvy experts designed to enable you to make more informed financial decisions. This episode looks at the early stages of planning for retirement. In the face of immediate financial concerns, it's challenging to focus on something that seems so far in the future like retirement. There's so much to think about when creating a wise retirement plan, so how do you get a handle on it? With the help of experts joining me today, folks of all ages can develop a more comprehensive and sophisticated understanding of what goes into preparing for retirement. My guests today are Christine Benz. She's the Director of Personal Finance and Senior Columnist for Morningstar.com and the author of the book, 30-Minute Money Solutions. I'm also joined today by Judith Ward, a certified financial planner at T. Rowe Price and a contributor at Forbes. Christine, so glad to have you with us.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Lynette. I'm really thrilled to be part of the podcast.
Good. Judy, it's great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Lynette. It's great to be here.
Let me kick things off by asking you, Christine, what does retirement look like for you?
Well, you know, I actually had a chance to think about that a little bit this summer. I was on a sabbatical from work, so I had 6 weeks off. And I did actually start to think about what retirement will feel like. And my working plan, at least for the past several years, has been to work past the traditional retirement age, mainly because I really enjoy what I do. And I know that's not the case for everyone. Some people, you know, do want to hang it up earlier, and I completely get it. But for me personally, I do think that my retirement will not be kind of the full stop type of retirement, but rather a gradual transition to retirement, and will probably commence past age 65.
Well, and I think that would probably be a great plan. So, Judy, regardless of what age our listeners might be, at what age should folks start to begin planning for and focusing on their retirement?
I would say as soon as you get your first job, and that could be when you're, you know, 16 years old, or, you know, 25 out of college or later. I know it typically, you know, younger folks aren't going to be thinking about retirement, but as soon as you get your first job, if there is a workplace plan, you definitely want to sign up and take advantage of it.
Can you talk to my 20-year-old and tell her? I would love for her to start focusing and thinking about retirement when she gets that first job. So what steps should people take to start planning for retirement if they do have the presence of mind to go ahead and do it when they're young and perhaps even as soon as they start their first job?
Yeah, and one of the reasons, again, as a financial planner that I think this is so important is, you know, nowadays we are really going to be responsible for funding our own retirement. For many of us, it's going to be our own savings plus Social Security, which is precarious for some people. And I talk to a lot of younger people that don't even want to plan for Social Security. So that just means you're even going to have to save more. So one of the things that I tell people is think about that future goal and think about, you know, what are going to be your sources of income in retirement? Are you going to have a pension? How much are you going to think about Social Security? Are you going to want to work in retirement? Or do you want that to be more of a choice? And so that will give you a sense of how much am I going to have to rely on my own personal savings? And if the answer is I'm going to have to rely a lot on my own personal savings, then you want to start getting some plan in place right now to start saving and figuring out what that amount is. And at T. Rowe Price, we talk about saving 15% of your salary for retirement. That might be difficult for people to do off the bat. So it's really important to get that company match if your company has one, or start at a lower amount, say 6% of your salary, and then work to kind of ramp up over time, especially as you get raises and bonuses. And just, again, make sure that you're putting money away on a regular basis for that future self in retirement.
So, Christine, how do you know how much you'll need to save for retirement?
It's a really good question, and it's kind of black boxy. My thought is to use a variety of retirement calculators to help determine whether your savings rate is on track and how much you would need to contribute on an ongoing basis to help replace your salary when you're eventually retired. I think Judy's advice about trying to sock away at least 15% of your gross income is a great starting point. Very high-income investors, though, should probably target an even higher savings rate if they can possibly swing it. But definitely avail yourself of technology that'll allow you to come out with a more customized solution of how much you should be setting aside each month or each paycheck.
Got it. So to follow up on that, what are the different ways that people can save for retirement or the types of accounts they can use?
Well, Judy hit on a few of the key ones. Certainly the employer-provided plan. If you're getting some kind of a matching contribution, that should be your starting point. Another account type is an IRA that's accessible to anyone who has earned income. You can make an IRA contribution. I often talk to young accumulators and make the point that a Roth IRA is a really good multitasking vehicle. If you think, well, I really have the best intentions of never touching this money before retirement, but I might need to tap it to make a home down payment, or I want to help pay for our wedding, or whatever the case might be. The good news is that you can withdraw those contributions without any penalties or taxes prior to retirement.
Right. I believe some of the other rules are concerning the length of time that you have to leave them in there, 5 years, in order to be able to withdraw any kind of earnings on that on a tax-free basis. Is that correct?
So things get more complicated if your plan is to tap your investment earnings. You do need to have the money in there for at least 5 years, but those contributions are yours to pull out. And again, you should ideally not do that, but it does give you some flexibility when you're just getting your plan up and running.
And Judy, what about some of the differences between the Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA?
In general, the difference is with a traditional IRA, you get a tax benefit today. Your contributions and earnings grow tax deferred. And then when you take that money out to use in retirement, you pay taxes on the entire, what we call distribution at that time. With the Roth, it's kind of the opposite. You don't get a tax benefit today. Your earnings and contributions still grow tax deferred. But in retirement, with qualified distributions, all of that money is tax free. So to Christine's point, this idea of tax diversification and providing flexibility, I think it's great to try to have both vehicles. You know, I would suggest for younger folks who anticipate that they're going to make more money over their careers and go into other tax brackets, that saving in a Roth option is a great thing to consider. And then just to continue with that, in your 401k plan, you might have options for, you know, the regular traditional side and a Roth option within your 401k. So that's another way to get this potential tax-free income in retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're a high-income investor, you probably should be using multiple accounts. For 401ks in 2018, the contribution limit if you're under 50 is $18,500. If you're over age 50, it's $24,500. That's for any company provided retirement plan, whether a 401k, a 403b, 457 plan. And then if you have the wherewithal to do so, you can also contribute to an IRA. So in 2018, the contribution limits are staying the same as they have been in years past. So that's $5,500 a year if you're under age 50 and $6,500 a year for people who are 50 and above. So ideally, you'd be taking a look at multiple accounts, especially if you're a high income saver, you're going to need to take advantage of multiple accounts.
Judy, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to also add, when we're looking at retirement accounts, we talked a lot around a workplace plan, such as a 401k plan and an IRA, but you know, there's a lot of people now that are self-employed or might be a small business. And so there are other options available to those folks, such as a SEP IRA, which is a simplified employee pension. They can have their own 401, a solo 401k plan, we call it.
That's what I have.
Yep. Or a simple IRA, for example. So, and some of those have much more generous contribution limits. So if you are, you know, higher income and can really accelerate those savings, they might be a good vehicle to consider.
I would jump in there too, Lynette, and mention a health savings account. So people don't think about HSAs, health savings accounts, as being for retirement, but think about it as kind of a single purpose IRA with better tax advantages than either a traditional or a Roth IRA. So the HSA gives you three tax breaks. One, you're able to make pre-tax contributions. You enjoy tax-free compounding on your money. And then withdrawals for qualified healthcare expenses are tax-free. So there's really nothing to compare to it in the whole tax code. It can be a really valuable tool in your total retirement toolkit.
I know my husband and I just used that to contribute the maximum, which I believe was $6,500 for 2017. And again, it is a great tax savings tool as well.
I agree with Christine around the value and the benefit of a health savings account. In order to have access to a health savings account, though, you have to be in a
high deductible
health plan. So just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. So is there a recommended percentage of income that people should be saving for retirement, Judy?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, we at T. Rowe Price think 15% of your income, and that might include anything your company would put in. Again, it might be difficult for people to be able to do that off the bat. If you can, that is fantastic. And especially for younger folks that can, what I call front load their savings, their retirement savings, that can later on in life, that can give you a lot more flexibility. So if you're on a really good track to save for retirement, and then you need to start saving for your kids' education or paying for a college education, that gives you some flexibility to possibly dial back your contribution so that you have more income to pay college tuition, for example. If you can't do 15% right away, then as we have mentioned, you know, invest to get that company match. That should be a minimum amount. If your plan doesn't offer a company match, think about starting at 6%. We've actually run analysis where we've compared someone who has saved 15% of their salary beginning at, like, say, age 30, compared to someone who started at 6 but ramped up their savings until they got to 15% by 2 percentage points every year. So, you know, within 5 years, roughly, they were up to that 15%. And basically, at the end of that analysis, you're pretty close. So it really does make a difference.
Sure. Now, Christine, I know that a lot of people are switching jobs more frequently than ever. What do you recommend that they do with their 401k plan, for example, when they switch jobs?
Well, first, what not to do. One option that's available to you when you leave a job is that you can pull your money out. And the downside of that is that you will pay an early withdrawal penalty on your money, and you'll also pay taxes. So by the time all of that comes out of it, the fat balance that you might be looking at is going to be a lot less compelling.
If you do withdraw it early, once you've switched jobs, you have to pay ordinary income tax rates and the 10% penalty if you're not 59 and a half, correct?
That's right. So it's a bum deal and a bad idea if you can possibly avoid it. If you have decided to roll it over into something, you really have three key options. One is to roll it over to an IRA. And the big advantage of that is that in contrast with some workplace-provided retirement plans, you won't typically have much, if anything, in the way of administrative costs associated with that IRA. Alternatively, you could roll the money into your new employer's 401k. That's another idea. But again, check out how good that 401k plan is, what sorts of administrative expenses might be associated with it, how cheap are the investments that are available to you. Do your homework before choosing that option. Another option that some employers might allow you to pursue is to leave the money back. But generally speaking, in most circumstances that I've seen, the rollover to an IRA of your own choosing is the better option. And the other virtue of that is that if you have old other rollover IRAs, you can consolidate them all together. That gives you less record keeping and oversight on an ongoing basis.
Now, with that third option you referenced, leaving the money with your former employer, there are some limits there in terms of the dollar amount. You have to have, is it $5,000 at least in there for them to be required to keep the funds with that particular employer?
There are minimums, and you do want to be careful if you have a very small amount. You want to try to pull it out of there because you may not be able to leave the money behind.
So, ladies, should you rebalance your 401k? And if so, how often? Judy, let me start with you.
Rebalancing really is about managing the risk of your investments. You're not going to necessarily hit it out of the ballpark with what you might earn on the investments, but it's really about managing the risk. And because of the long time horizon, you might have to manage that well along that journey. So we think it is a good idea to rebalance. We even have analysis that says that rebalancing once a year is fine. Some plans might even have a rebalancing service that you can take advantage of. But for a lot of people, this might be difficult and it might be hard for them to do. And that's where I think the beauty of the investments like balance funds, like target date funds that do this within the investment. You know, with a balance fund, you can kind of choose the mix of stocks and bonds that you want and it stays that way. With a target date fund, you know, it's set up more for your time horizon and it will actually shift the allocation over time. And so that's great for people who maybe know they should be rebalancing, don't know how to do it, or don't want to do it. You know, those kinds of investments are, you know, something they should consider.
And Christine, your thoughts on rebalancing your 401k?
The risk of a portfolio, if you do nothing, will tend to grow over time as the equity piece of your portfolio gets larger and larger. So one example I've been using lately is that if you had a portfolio that was 60% stock, 40% bond in early 2009, and you didn't do anything to it through late 2017, well, you would have had more than 80% in stocks and just 20% in bonds. Even if you hadn't done anything, if you hadn't been adding to stocks, your portfolio would have been growing more risky. So rebalancing is a way to periodically take some risk off the table. I think it's arguably the most important as you sort of get into your 50s and start getting closer to retirement.
So beyond failure to rebalance, for example, what are some other most common mistakes or perhaps things that people typically overlook when they're saving for retirement?
I would say that paying too much attention to investment selection and overlooking the sheer impact of how much you're saving. Because really, how much you're saving is going to determine your retirement success. I mean, investments definitely matter. You don't want to be in cash, for example. But if you have a diversified portfolio, it's that deferral rate that is really going to drive retirement success. And I think more often people overlook that simple thing that's in our control. If you're not saving enough, the best investment is not going to help create that great retirement that you envision.
Judy, I couldn't agree more on that point. I've had friends and family members come to me and say, can you look at my portfolio? I just am really worried about it. And I look at the portfolio and most of the time it's not the portfolio that's troubling, it's the person's savings rate.
Well, speaking of savings rate, I think that's a good point for us to pivot now into a segment that we call This or That. And this is the section of the podcast where we discuss the pros and cons of any two options to a given financial challenge. So this episode's challenge has to do with priorities. This or that, saving for retirement or paying down debt. Christine, let's start with you.
Well, I think you want to look at the return on investment for each of those choices. So look at the interest rate that you're paying to service your debt. Look at whether you're eligible for any tax breaks on your interest on that debt. And compare that to your expected return for investing in the market. So let's use high interest credit card debt as an example. Well, that one's easy if it's like 15% or something like that. You are never going to earn that return by investing in the market. So the answer is easy. Go ahead and service that debt. Pay down the credit card debt before investing in the market.
A lot of debt that I hear about is student loan debt. So especially with the younger generation, they feel like it's a big burden. Like they have this burden of student loan debt and they feel like they really need to pay it off before they can do anything else. And I think that's an area to what Christine was saying. You know, think about, you know, the interest rate on that debt versus what you can get saving for retirement. And especially for younger folks, the compounding, the impact of compounding that they have saving for decades in retirement can be significant. So I would generally say, hey, what you your regular payments on your student loan debt, you could even look into options of different payment methods. but I wouldn't necessarily want a younger person to feel like they can't save for retirement until they get all that student loan debt paid down.
I think it's a fact of life that we're all going to be multitasking in some fashion throughout our years. So whether it's student loan debt versus retirement savings early on, or once people have children, the choice is between retirement savings or saving for college. The fact is, throughout our lives, doing a little bit of both or a lot of both is going to be the way to go.
Okay. So my next question is for a segment that we call Keeping You Up at Night. I want to give you both a hypothetical situation that brings a lot of concern to people, and I just want you to respond with your perspective. So here's the question that often keeps people up at night. Can I really count on Social Security as a part of my retirement income? Judy, I know you're a big proponent of saving for retirement, so let's start with you.
We hear that all the time. And I believe that so currently Social Security is going to be okay until around, I think, the year 2034, 2035. And so then what happens is that this surplus funds and this trust fund are going to be depleted. After that point, they'll still be able to pay out 77% of the benefit. So it's not like Social Security is going to go away anytime immediately. But again, it is in a little precarious situation.
And Christine, since we're talking about the longer term view for retirement, and presumably many of our listeners are, you know, a decade plus away from retirement, what do you think? Can they count on Social Security as part of their retirement income?
I think they can count on receiving something from the program. I talked to a financial planner about this issue, and he said his young clients always say, well, leave it out of your modeling, and we'll assume that it's not going to be there for us. And so this planner says he'll do that, but he says then when they see how much that will require them to save to make up for the shortfall, they'll say, okay, hang on a sec, put it back in.
Put it back in there.
I think when I've talked to planners about this issue, they've recommended maybe give that benefit like a 25%, 30% haircut to account for potential changes to the program in the years going forward. I think that's a prudent course of action.
Okay, so ladies, I've got one final challenge for you, and we call this one the big picture. This is where together we really want to encourage a particular goal for our listeners and then offer them ways of achieving that goal. So for today's big picture, here's the tip. And I think it's a takeaway that you both have emphasized. Start saving for retirement as early as humanly possible. And of course, save as much as you can. So, Christine, any words of wisdom that you can offer our listeners to encourage this early investment?
One thing I would think about is when you're in that decade of your first job, like 22 to 32, make sure that you are trying to increase your earnings power over your lifetime. Putting some time and thought into how I can enhance my lifetime earnings, and that'll pay off a lot in terms of future retirement savings. So you definitely want to be saving aggressively in those years, but also investing in yourself, investing in your own human capital. I think that that's something that young accumulators should definitely have in mind.
Judy, your final words of wisdom?
Yeah, I really love what Christine just said. I think that is really important. The other little tip that I might add on is just to try to automate as much as you can. Using your workplace plan, the money comes out of your paycheck, goes right into the account. You can do the same thing investing in an IRA. You know, if you can automate these so that it just goes straight from your paycheck into a retirement account, you can't spend it that way.
I want to thank both of my guests, Christine Benz. Such a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, it was great to be here, Lynette. Thank you.
And Judith Ward, again, great to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Lynette.
And we want to thank you, our listeners. Please be sure to join us for our next episode about retirement planning, the near-term view. Again, I'm Lynette Calfani-Cox, the Money Coach. If you like The Confident Wallet, please rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of The Confident Wallet podcast series is provided for general and educational purposes only and is not intended to provide legal, tax, or investment advice. This podcast episode does not provide fiduciary recommendations concerning investments or investment management. It is not individualized to the needs of any specific benefit plan or retirement investor, nor is it directed to any recipient in connection with a specific investment or investment management decision. Investors will need to consider their own circumstances before making an investment decision. All investments involve risk, including possible loss of principal. The views expressed are at the time of the presentation and may have changed since that time. T. Rowe Price, the Bighorn Sheep Design, and the Confident Wallet, collectively and or apart, are trademarks of T. Rowe Price Group, Inc., all rights reserved. The trademarks displayed throughout this podcast are the property of their respective owners, T. Rowe Price Investment Services, Inc.